It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
President Biden focusing on domestic politics with another trip to the swing state of Michigan today, certainly keeping an eye on union workers, and that's evidenced by his statement on the U.S. steel deal. But as we know, this president also has a watchful eye, as always, on foreign policy. It was something he led his State of the Union address with last Thursday, just a week ago today, pleading with Congress to pass additional aid for Ukraine. And of course, the president also has been meeting with foreign leaders in Washington this week on that issue. We caught up with one of them, the president of Poland, Andrzej Duda, after his trip to the White House earlier this week. And he talked about the consequence if more aid for Ukraine does not come, what Russia could then do next. Take a listen to what he told us.
We are the nation who was enslaved by Russia several times. If Russia wins the war in Ukraine, if Putin wins the war in Ukraine, he will attack one more time. He will attack other states because this is Russian imperialism reborn, and it is greedy. It will be willing to attack further. That is why it has to be stopped. It has to be blocked, and it has to be punished. And this is the most important task that is facing the community of the West today.
And that is where we begin our conversation with Ivika Salina, the Prime Minister of Latvia, is now with us in studio. And Prime Minister, it's great to see you. Thank you for joining us today at Bloomberg. Is your time spent in Washington today meeting with lawmakers on Capitol Hill to make the case for funding in Ukraine?
You know, I am here showing my gratitude towards Ukrainian people because I believe they are fighting not just for Europeans, but for Americans as well. So that's why I see it's important that when we look to transatlantic relations, we could see those democratic values and liberties be met. That's why for sure I hope there will be this decision about help to Ukraine, because it's at utmost importance to my country, to Europe, to Ukrainians, that those promises and those international values we all are agreed some time ago, we can still be holding very high on our priorities.
Well, it still, though, remains very much a question whether or not Congress has that same view, whether or not continuing to provide aid for Ukraine is necessary. What is Latvia's concern about if the aid for Ukraine does not come through to the same extent it has over the course of the war thus far? If Ukraine does not win this, what happens to your country? What do you fear would happen?
You know, our country is struggling like living in a house with an alcoholic neighbor. And I would say Russia is this alcoholic or drug addict neighbor. You never know what he will do next. So you can do your homework, you can protect your door, as Latvia has done. We are spending almost 3% of our GDP to our military and defense. We are giving Ukraine help almost of 0.25 for military capabilities. But we know that without our allies working together, Ukraine cannot succeed in a speed we all wanting. It means that NATO countries can get under the target of Russia. So why are we ready for that? I don't think so. Because maybe from the perspective of Washington, it seems Ukraine and Russia is far away. But if Russia wins, those consequences will affect all the world, also Washington, also United States. Not just Europe will be affected by this result of the conflict.
You're marking 20 years as a member of NATO in Latvia, which is a remarkable moment for you. And Jens Stoltenberg is asking for more. He spoke earlier to reporters, the Secretary General, asking for European nations to increase their commitment, to increase aid to Ukraine. What is Latvia prepared to do? What are your neighbors prepared to do?
We have helped Ukraine since the beginning of the war, even before. Latvians were the first who gave military aid to Ukraine, and that's why Kyiv is free from Russians. And we know that we will be doing more. As I mentioned before, we are already giving 0.25% of our GDP military aid. We are leading drone coalition together with the United Kingdom, helping Ukraine to fight with Russia with drones, because it can substitute artillery in some cases. And there are many other countries joining this drone coalition. We will be the ones who will be participating in the Czech platform, buying artillery for Ukraine now, because they really need this artillery now. We cannot let Russia win this war, because it will be not just Russia, it will be China as well. So we have to understand those links are interconnected, and then we can lose the values democratic states share all around the world. We are democracies, and democracy is costly.
You mentioned that you are joining that Czech effort to get more artillery shells to Ukraine, something we know is desperately needed. Europe's promises to deliver more shells to Ukraine have not happened on the timeline at which they initially said. How else can that ammunition be sourced? What other countries might be able to provide it? How can you go about getting it to Ukraine in the more immediate term?
That's why we are joining this Czech platform. They are ready to buy from third countries outside Europe, and we know that there will be many European countries joining this initiative. And we are looking towards India, maybe some other countries where we can find those artillery which we are not yet able to produce ourselves in Europe. The fact is that in Europe we are not able to produce so much as it is needed for Ukraine right now. That's why help from allies such as United States is very important, not just because we cannot do something that's technically not possible in such a speedy way. And I believe it is doable if we can act together, if we can act together on a united decision.
It appears likely that Vladimir Putin will win another term as president this weekend. I'm not sure how much time will be spent counting votes, Prime Minister. But do you believe that it is his goal to reconstitute the Soviet Union?
You know, it's hard to analyze what Putin thinks.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's been a leader of that country, a neighboring country of Latvia and Baltic states, for quite a long time. And what I have seen, this country has become more desperate, less liberty, less human rights, less opportunities for freedom of speech. And I believe he has some crazy ideas in his mind, if we can see what really happened with the war in Ukraine. So I can just imagine if he will have a sense that those democratic states have some crack in the wall and they are not as strong as we can act together, I believe he can use his crazy ideas and try to threaten and try to fear other countries in Europe, as well as it could be unpredictable.
So that's the Russian president and a Russian election. We have an election of our own here in the United States coming up in November, where also unpredictability was somewhat of a feature of the previous administration. And we have heard former President Trump, who, of course, is likely to be the Republican nominee. He has the number of delegates to be the nominee come July, suggest that when it comes to NATO countries who aren't paying their fair share, I know that Latvia is above the quota, but that Putin could do whatever the hell he wants to those countries. How much does that rhetoric concern you? Do you fear the prospect of another Trump administration?
You know, during election time, this procedure could be very messy. And maybe it's even good that sometimes it's messy, because in Russia there is no even messy time. We just already know the results. So at least in democratic states, we have a lot of very, very strong discussions. Latvia sees United States as a very strong, our transatlantic ally. We have learned from you a lot, and we would like to do it in next upcoming years as well. So for sure, we will be working with any administration, but for us, it is very important that NATO alliance is strong, that those articles which are written down to NATO alliance, that they have been kept alive. Because otherwise, it is really a big, big threat for our countries, for our democracies.
Well, we're talking about a potential two-tiered alliance if there is another Trump administration, where those who do not pay enough will not be protected under Article 5. Would a Trump administration be the end of NATO as we know it?
You know, I have negotiated with some of people out of White House, and I believe there is a strong belief in the values of NATO. Nevertheless, how maybe publicly some messages have been said.
I see.
And I still believe in a united consensus of NATO. Otherwise, we will weaken ourselves, and we will weaken not just NATO, we will weaken our countries. That's why Latvia will work with any administration, and we will have a strong belief that your elections will be good. And I wish your people good elections, a good process in that. I really understand it, but I hope that we will not let down NATO alliance.
Of course, when we think about the NATO alliance, Ukraine is not a member of that alliance. Ukraine is not entitled, obviously, because they're fighting a war with Russia, to the same protections that Article 5 provides, which is that other members of the alliance will even put boots on the ground if necessary in order to defend you as a country. But we've heard Europeans suggest, French President Emmanuel Macron essentially said it wouldn't be off the table necessarily to see boots on the ground in Ukraine if it became necessary. Would Latvia ever be willing to do that? You've talked about all that you are providing to Ukraine in terms of drones, in terms of other spending, obviously, effort to get artillery shells. But would it ever be men? Could there reach a point in which that becomes necessary?
I would love to have a NATO's opinion on this particular step forward, because I believe in NATO. I believe in those procedures and analysis what our military personnel has done. And that's why I really see that if there could be some training necessary, yes, we could move it to Ukraine as well. And there could be different, diversions of what does it really mean, boots on the ground, because this proposal was not probably very well prepared among the other countries participating in the meeting. I was as well in Paris on that evening. But we reached one good outcome of that meeting, and it was this Czech platform where we all decided that we can buy artillery, what Ukraine needs right now. And that was a good outcome. So sometimes maybe there are some ideas our leaders want to show. And I believe Macron just wanted to show a leadership. And what we all really need, we need to be strong leaders of our countries to really move fast and to make decisions which can help Ukraine. What Ukraine asks, we have to give them.
If the funding does not come from the U.S., which is unknown at this point, we're talking about $60 billion. It's been made clear to us that that could not be replaced by Europe. Do you worry in that hypothetical situation that Latvia's borders would be at risk?
We are at hybrid attacks every day. We have been experiencing weaponization of migration to our borders from Belarus and Russia. So we are fighting already every day with those threats Russia is giving to Europe. And we have been very informed about what's going on our borders and how Russia want to do maybe threaten our people. But we have been doing a lot. We built a fence on the border of Belarus and Russia. But we know that we as Europeans need to do more in military industry. So in any case, Europe will change the perspective of how we see our military capabilities. If United States will not give this aid, it will be very worse upset of circumstances for Ukraine. And I believe the outcome of this situation could be As well as not good for United States as well, because you have been leaders of democracy, superpower, for quite a long time. Why do you think someone else would not want to step in if they see there is not this strong leadership towards aid to Ukraine?
All right, Latvian Prime Minister Lika Savina, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time for joining us here in Washington, and good luck for the rest of your trip. And Joe, this is, of course, as we hear the Prime Minister talking about the U.S.'s role as a leading global democracy, the place in the world, this is something that President Biden has consistently brought up. Mm-hmm. It's just not exactly clear to what extent that message may be resonating with those in Congress who currently the power to decide whether or not this funding continually is going to be provided to Ukraine.
He talks about frequently his visit to his first G7 as president, mm-hmm. when his message was America is back. And the first question he got was for how long? And that is something that we're asking legitimately in this case with conversations like these. So thanks again to the Prime Minister in a conversation you'll only see and hear here on Bloomberg. I'm Joe Matthew alongside Kaylee Lyons in Washington. A lot more to follow. We'll assemble our panel coming up next for their take on our conversation on the fastest show in politics.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Welcome to the Thursday edition of Balance of Power. You made it to Little Friday here on Bloomberg Radio and TV. I'm Joe Matthew alongside Kaylee Lyons in Washington as we assemble our panel with an eye on the campaign trail. Joe Biden moving on to Michigan as he leans into blue-collar workers to preserve the blue wall that so many of us refer to in his victory in 2020. With us today, Rick Davis, Bloomberg Politics contributor and, of course, Republican strategist, along for the ride as we consider what the president is up to here. Rick is joined today by Pat Dennis at American Bridge, Democratic analyst. It's great to see you both. Pat, talk to us about Joe Biden in Michigan. He's trying to appeal to unionized workers who have a history for voting for Donald Trump. And it doesn't seem that becoming the first president to walk the picket line is enough to pull them into the fold. What does he have to tell them today?
Well, nobody said this campaign's going to be easy, but I think the most important thing we see here is that Joe Biden's there. He's doing the work. He's focused on these states in particular, these Great Lakes states. My organization, American Bridge, these, you know, three sort of Great Lakes states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, we've identified as, you know, all the swing states are important, but those three in particular for us are like the key place to focus on. And these voters too. So he needs to be talking to them. He needs to be communicating with them. That's what he's doing. But also he's doing what Donald Trump couldn't do, which is delivering the infrastructure funds from the infrastructure bill that Donald Trump only ever talked about. And Joe Biden went and got done, and in a bipartisan manner, I should.
Yeah, Biden did talk about that in the State of the Union address, talking about lawmakers who didn't vote for that bill but still cheer when the money comes, and made a joke about if anyone didn't want the money in their districts, just to let him know about that. But as we hear about this blue wall, it's not just Michigan where he is now. Pennsylvania, also his home state, critical, obviously, Rick. And I wonder to what extent it is the knowledge of battleground Pennsylvania and the steelworking presence there that prompted President Biden to issue a statement on the U.S. steel, Nippon Steel deal, essentially saying this needs to stay in American hands. The quote from the president, "I told our steel workers I have their backs and I mean it." And Rick, we already know CFIUS was looking at this deal. There was potentially national security concerns. But is this really about national security, or is this about politics?
Well, these days, everything seems to be about national security. Social media is national security. Electric vehicles are national security, and now steel is national security. And so if this isn't the most national security conscious administration in history, I wouldn't imagine who to compare it to. Bottom line is, this is super consistent, you know, with the Biden administration, you know, whether you look at it through a lens of antitrust or protectionism. But the bottom line is, as you point out, this is an election year, and it's all about votes in Pennsylvania. And I must say, he's got a much bigger challenge, according to the surveys, in Pennsylvania than he does in Michigan. And so this is really critical, not just to be able to reassure voters that he's going to keep jobs there, ownership's going to not change in his watch. But, you know, when you look at the national security implications, we don't have any more important ally in the Pacific than Japan. They are critical to our strategy in Indo-PACOM. And so it's really a two-edged sword for the Biden administration. He taketh with the steel business, but he has to give it away to one of our greatest allies in a competition against China. So I think they're caught in a bit of a wedge now. The idea that this is anything other than a pretty, you know, sort of smart domestic political play, I think is sort of exaggeration at this point.
Well, people waking up today in Michigan, where the president is, Pennsylvania, aforementioned, and Wisconsin are going to watch a 30-second ad if they sit through the break, and they're going to see men dressed in camouflage with the bright orange hunting gear carrying rifles going out to hunt. And the voiceover is talking about the infrastructure deal and the CHIPS Act, Pat. This is a new seven-figure ad by the Laborers International Union of North America. Does this stuff actually work?
Absolutely. And, you know, my organization is currently focused on, you know, finding real people in these states who we don't script our ads, and we sit down and talk to people and talk about how important these things are and how it matters to people, and put that on TV. And that's the most effective way to do it. So that's what this ad you're talking about is. And that's it's a real winning strategy that we believe in too.
Well, Pat, as we consider, this is a week ago today that President Biden was giving the State of the Union address. Now he's doing all of these swing state trips. He's done several just over the course of the last week. There's advertising being spent. We know he is sitting on a massive pile of money as well. He's done well with fundraising, and yet we haven't really seen any shift in polling post State of the Union, as you typically might expect a little bump. So how hard is he going to have to work for a bump when his approval rating is historically the lowest of any incumbent president at this time in modern history?
We're all gonna have to be working real hard. And these things, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. You need to make the case over time, consistently, with consistent, you know, principled communication. And I think a great example is what he's doing with steelworkers right now. It is part of a pattern with Joe Biden, where you see it with the CHIPS Act as well, where there are important considerations of bringing these jobs back, you know, onshoring these jobs. You know, there's the national security aspect of it, but there's also just, you know, you need a strong American industry to do that. I think that message is really going to resonate, and it stands in incredible contrast to somebody like Donald Trump, who, like, people forget about this, but had the opportunity to build his towers in Chicago and in Las Vegas with American steel, and actually went and got a deal and bought all this steel from China and said, what, you know, what about those American steelworkers? So this is going to be a really important message, and you need to follow it up with action, and that's what Joe Biden's doing.
Well, Rick, the White House is touting today, I guess the White House and by way of the campaign, the first stop by a president or vice president to an abortion clinic. Kamala Harris meeting with abortion providers today in Minneapolis with some very delicate optics here for an issue that is clearly favoring Democrats at the polls right now. Is this a little too on the nose for you, or is this smart politics?
Oh, I think it's probably smart politics. I mean, you know, we've seen over time, you know, last 50 years, the abortion issue ebb and flow in importance to the American electorate. It's not always as intense as it was right after the Supreme Court had the Dobbs ruling and threw out Roe v. Wade. We saw a spike in people's attitudes toward abortion. Up until that point in time, it was languishing toward the bottom of the issue scale. So this is one way to try and get it back up there. They know, Democrats do, that they can generate intensity with their voter base. They're unlikely to change voters' minds, but that intensity is critical in an election year where, frankly, the majority of Americans don't like either candidate or aren't enthusiastic about this race. So I think that using the vice president in a fashion that somehow might be helpful to their political outcomes, number one, is important because it's an asset that Trump doesn't have right now. And two, abortion is, I think, one of the critical issues for creating some kind of excitement amongst Democratic voters.
So is this the best use of Vice President Harris? Is this the best issue for Vice President Harris, Rick?
Well, it's not immigration. You know, we started this administration.
Yeah, that was her first assignment.
That didn't work out so well. So, sure, I think this is probably a good issue for her. It is a significantly important issue to Democrats. And so I would anticipate Joe Biden himself taking a role in this process of bringing abortion more to the front of the line on a political issue campaign. I can imagine there'll be some significant advertising around it, probably closer to the fall. But the bottom line is that, you know, they got to find something for the vice president to do that doesn't cross pressure voters who don't like her. And this is probably a safe bet.
Well, she's got more than that going in the portfolio, Pat. She'll be meeting on Friday with three people who have been pardoned for cannabis offenses. Rick just mentioned immigration. My goodness, is there anything else that Joe Biden can saddle her with that would make her life more difficult?
Well, I'm going to disagree with you there a little bit. Yeah? I think that issue in particular is really an important cross-cutting issue that you see. You know, I'm a guy who looks at a lot of polls, and you see, you know, across parties a real belief that there were injustices around, you know, the prosecutions around cannabis, especially in, you know, states where it's now illegal. And that is, to me, a gimme. That's an easy one. That's a place where there are a lot of Republicans who just don't want to talk about it. And it's also a very important issue in, you know, sort of blue collar communities and cuts across parties. So I think that's a good one. And to build on what Rick was saying a little bit on the abortion issue, just to go back, it's voters, we don't necessarily need to change their mind. This is a place where you look at these focus groups, and these voters have incredibly nuanced views, right? And those views, time and time and time again, say, I have this view, I've thought about this, I've made healthcare decisions with my family, and don't you tell me what to do. Even if they are somebody who leans more, you know, pro-life on that issue, like, the reason we're winning on this is because people have put a lot of thought into it.
All right, Pat Dennis, American Bridge president and Democratic strategist, and Rick Davis, Bloomberg Politics contributor, Republican strategist. Thank you both so much.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
We've been talking a lot about TikTok because the House of Representatives, with a massive bipartisan margin, passed a bill yesterday that would see it banned in the United States if ByteDance, its Chinese owner, does not divest it. Will it pass in the Senate, though? That's a very different question. And certainly TikTok is trying to make sure that doesn't happen. There is a big lobbying effort underway, including TikTok CEO Shou Chu making a visit to senators on Capitol Hill and reiterating a pretty similar message. We heard from him on this. Take a listen.
Over the last few years, we have invested to keep your data safe and our platform free from outside manipulation. We have committed that we will continue to do so. We will continue to do all we can, including exercising our legal rights to protect this amazing platform that we have built with you.
Enter Steven Mnuchin. What you say? Remember, this is a divest or ban bill.
Yes. Or.
That for 6 months you get to divest TikTok. And all day yesterday we said, well, who would buy it? Who could do this in time? Steven Mnuchin, the former Treasury Secretary who's been known to make interesting plays here in the investment world, raises his hand today, tells another network, Kaylee, that he will buy TikTok from its Chinese parent company. The problem is China has to approve that.
Right.
That's not going to happen, is it?
Right. This also would be a pretty pricey acquisition for the record.
What's
tens
it worth?
Of billions of dollars. Bloomberg Intelligence estimates upward of $40 billion, potentially more, so for the U.S. Like business. It wouldn't
Twitter
be cheap.
Over,
he would need other investors to get in on this. But again, to your point, it also requires the sign off of China. So we wanted to turn to a China expert. Anna Ashton is joining us now. Ashton Analytics founder, former Department of Defense intelligence officer. Anna, great to have you back on Bloomberg TV and radio. I guess it doesn't even really matter whether or not the Senate passes it or Biden signs it, if China's not going to go along with it, right? Will China let this happen?
I mean, that is a really good question, Kaylee. And I think the algorithm that makes TikTok so powerful and so compelling to users is the reason that the U.S. government is worried about the national security concerns surrounding TikTok. It's the reason why personal data that TikTok may be collecting would be problematic if it were put in the hands of the Chinese government. And it's the reason why the Chinese government might not want to allow such a sale to go through. That algorithm is a Chinese invented algorithm. And that's the kind of thing that gives Chinese companies an edge, or certainly this Chinese company an edge over US competitors. So it's not clear that they would sell it then again, or that they would allow it. Then again, it's not clear that they wouldn't. I think we just have to wait and see.
So I guess the question becomes, what's worse for Beijing. If they did not clear a deal like that, does China want to see TikTok banned in the U.S., or is China smart enough to know that these kids will VPN around anything and find that app anyway?
I think it's more the latter, Joe. I mean, I think, you know, TikTok was banned in India, and the Chinese government didn't really lift a finger to stop that. I don't think that the Chinese government necessarily will lift a finger to stop a TikTok ban in the U.S. This is, you know, the parent company ByteDance is a private sector company. And at the end of the day, this is not one of the strategic industries that the Chinese government has designated for attention and subsidies and investment.
Well, speaking of strategic industries, obviously there are the U.S. government, specifically those in Congress who are supportive of this measure, have said this is all about national security risk, just like the Biden administration, when doing things like imposing export controls, says this is about national security risk. Rick Davis, one of our Bloomberg Politics contributors, was basically laughing at the idea that everything seems to be about national security these days in Washington. What poses the greatest national security risk coming from China? Is it about access to data like this, or is it about critical materials, critical minerals, semiconductors, actual technology that's going to power the future?
I would argue that, you know, China's hold on critical minerals, which is it has a virtual monopoly on a lot of them, is a more significant national security risk in an adversarial relationship between the U.S. and China than, you know, the fact that the parent company of this wildly popular social media platform is a Chinese company. But, you know, I think that the concerns around TikTok are both about access to data that users may be providing to the platform, and about the potential for the platform to be used to push propaganda to U.S. users. Mm-hmm. And there have been some studies done on that that could lead you to conclude that the platform is biased, but, you know, are not definitive.
Well, so, Anna, are you surprised that this is running into headwinds in the Senate after all the talk and the bluster from both sides of the aisle when it comes to China? The China Select Committee has obviously been driving the conversation in the House, but this is not new for the leadership or the rank and file in the Senate. What seems to be the holdup?
It's not new. And I think, you know, there are First Amendment concerns. There are a lot of voters who would be pretty ticked off if they were no longer able to run their businesses on the TikTok platform, or with the use of the TikTok platform, no longer able to communicate via the TikTok platform. Those users have inundated Congress with calls at the request of TikTok itself. And you know, I think that there's a real consideration about voters in an election year. So there's both the consideration that somehow the platform might be used to influence voters in one way or another, and tilt the campaigns, tilt the election. And the concern that voters might be turned off by candidates who support a ban. Mm-hmm. So it's tricky politics, and sort of no surprise that it's been pushed forward during such a big election year, and also no surprise that there's uncertainty around where it's going to go.
She's the founder of Ashton Analytics, former Department of Defense intelligence officer. Anna Ashton, great to have you back with us, Anna. Thank you for the insights.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stiefel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stiefel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stiefel.com. That's STIEFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists.
But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Joe Matthew in Washington with more on Israel. And this is important here that we actually have news that the administration is expected to impose new sanctions on two illegal outposts in the occupied West Bank used as a base for attacks against Palestinian civilians, I should say, attacks by Israeli settlers. This is the first time we will have seen something like this, and it's partly why we wanted to talk to Michael Allen. He's with us from Beacon Global Strategies, managing director and partner, having spent a career in national security, specifically in the George W. Bush administration. It's great to have you back, Michael. The significance of these sanctions coming from the Biden White House, things are not getting easier with Israel, are they?
No, I think that's exactly right. The Biden administration is continually unhappy with Benjamin Netanyahu and the way that his cabinet is conducting the war with Gaza, the way that they feel like they're not managing the settlers, the Israeli settlers in the West Bank. And so this might be the second or third grouping of sanctions that Biden has used to go after them. So this is pretty significant to take an ally and sanction an ally's citizens.
Yeah. It's remarkable. These sanctions being imposed against entire outposts, entire settlements, as opposed to individuals, which is what makes this unique. And of course, Michael, we were talking about a temporary port, and we still are, by the way, a temporary pier or port in Gaza to deliver humanitarian aid. That says a lot about our situation right now with Israel. Senior American officials are telling Israel reportedly that they would support a targeted campaign in Rafah. And I think that's important, Michael. You can speak to the standoff over Rafah. The president has made it clear, Joe Biden to Benjamin Netanyahu, that that is a red line, that it, beginning an invasion without a plan to protect civilians in the city of Rafah is a non-starter. Are we seeing progress here then on what we're calling a targeted campaign?
I think so. I honestly was a little confused about what President Biden meant on MSNBC last weekend when he said going into Rafah at all was a red line. To me, that's what the Israelis have been saying for months, since October 7th, that they feel like they have to go after Hamas in all three sections of the Gaza Strip. We all knew that the bottom third, the Rafah operation, was next. And to say that, hey, we're not supporting Israel's war anymore, made no sense. The National Security Advisor came out 2 days later and said much of what you just quoted back to me just now, which is that we, the United States, would support a Rafah operation if it were done, I think, in sort of a narrowly tailored fashion and in a way where they could evacuate many of the Palestinians who were down in the south and allegedly sort of restrained there. So I think we are perhaps making progress with the Israelis, but I don't think the White House is winning much influence over the Israelis the more they seem to beat up Bibi Netanyahu.
Well, I guess that appears to be true. It's just interesting, Michael. We were told a lot about the ability for the Israeli military, this very capable fighting force, to use precision. We were told that they would not want to go into a dense area like Gaza City or now Rafah at the expense of civilians. But of course, we've seen more than 30,000 civilians die, and realizing that some of them may have been Hamas, you wonder if it's the strategy that's being employed or, in fact, the IDF's ability to be precise that we're talking about here.
Yeah, I was struck by an interview I heard where General Amos Yadlin, who is a dovish general but famous within Israel for some of his military exploits, he was describing exactly what the IDF is doing, which he thinks has no other precedent. And it's that it's an underground military. And he asked and he cited, how long did it take the Americans to destroy ISIS in Mosul when we were in Iraq? And the answer was 9 months. And General Yadlin is saying, you know, it's so much harder, but when you have no support from the international community and the terrorists in this case are actually underground. And we know, I think, that the Israelis are not always using their most precision weapons. And it's very hard to go after these tunnels, which have been more extensive than they realized. So there's all sorts of factors piling up on the IDF. And I think those are the reasons why you've seen so many unfortunate innocent Palestinian deaths.
We're spending time with Michael Allen from Beacon Global Strategies. It was just 2 days ago, Michael, that Hezbollah launched more than 100 missiles at Israeli military sites. We're not talking about it as often. How concerned should we be about a new front to the north?
I think we should be very, very concerned. Hezbollah is much more capable than Hamas. They have hundreds of thousands of medium range and longer range weapons. They have much more training and support from Iran than does Hamas. And so this is really something the Israelis are worried about, not only because it would be then a two-front war for Israel and arguably more fronts than that when you consider the Houthi and you consider Iranian-backed groups in Syria and Iraq, but Hezbollah is so aggressive and has so many more capabilities to hold hostages, to raid into northern Israel. It's something they're very, very worried about. And I think it's something that we have to continue to watch. I still don't think it's over 50% that they're going to go in, Hezbollah, and try and start a war. But it is definitely significant enough that we should be watching it every day and trying to manage it. We, the United States, should be trying to manage that crisis into a safer place.
I've got less than a minute, Michael. Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, wants to see Israel flooding the zone with food aid. That cannot be done without the military, correct?
That's exactly right. And I think, well, we all agree that we should be flooding the zone. The Israelis should be flooding the zone with humanitarian aid. But the point that the Israelis are trying to make to us over and over again is that it's not so much the quantity of the aid, it's that Hamas is taking control of that assistance once it's inside the boundaries of the Gaza Strip. That's what the Israelis are worried about, that Hamas is using it to reestablish power.
Michael Allen, it's great to have you back with Beacon Global Strategies, talking with us about the stakes in Israel, a political situation not getting easier for Joe Biden. This is Bloomberg. Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.